This episode is brought to you by Rev1. Rev1's mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. As you navigate the waters of business entrepreneurship, you don't have to go it alone. A strategic partnership with Rev1 connects innovators to the talent, customers, space, and funding you need when you need it. Get started with Rev1 Startup Studio by visiting rev1ventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is rev1ventures.com. .com 614 Startups Nation, welcome to another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, your host, and I'm back in my favorite seat, guys, and I have a very, very special guest, somebody whose work has been instrumental into us going from one level to the next. That's none other than my very special guest, Aarthi Rathi of Book and Street. Aarthi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Elio. Excited to be here with you.
Yes. Now, Aarthi, I fashion myself a good student, but when it comes to finance, I still have a lot to learn. And I'm guessing that's like very many founders who are going to listen to this podcast. So when I reached out to you about today, we're not going to focus so much on the business side, although that's unavoidable. We're going to focus on the personal side, something that some might take for granted before starting a startup. But before we dig too deep into that conversation, we need to get to know you. So why don't you start with a little bit about Aarthi Rathi and how you came to work for Book and Street?
All right. So first of all, thank you, Elio. Appreciate you and appreciate what 614 does for the startup community in Columbus. So it's a great environment which you're trying to build and create. So thank you for that. How did I get into the world of finance, and then how did I get to Book and Street? So a pretty long journey, to be honest. I've been working for 20 plus years in the world of finance, different places from Deloitte Consulting to then Cardinal Health, Fortune 15, as we all know, in our own backyard here in Columbus with great experiences. And then I think I came to a kind of a pivotal point some years back where I'm like, okay, I have all this knowledge. I've learned all these experiences, worked with some wonderful, great people. And I want to kind of use that more to kind of support the community around me and how best to support the community around me. Startups is what kind of in my, I would say a little bit of the business background is in my blood just because I come from business family. Right. So that was one of the things, plus what was happening around in Columbus and in Midwest in general. The thriving startup community, working with, you know, those entrepreneurs kind of excited me. And I'm like, okay, let me, if that's the way I want to contribute back to the community and the local environment and economy, that's a perfect way for me to do it. And that kind of got me segued into Book and Street, which was founded by Michelle Mercier. Bumped into her at one of those events and we just hit it off. And I'm like, okay, I am coming to work at Book and Street. And that's how it all started.
Yeah, Michelle has a very compelling mission. She's a compelling personality in and of herself. And so she's been a guest on the show. So it's good that you're part of that team. When I follow your social media, and if you guys are not following Book and Street social media, what are you doing? All right, get on LinkedIn, hey. Get on your favorite platform and follow Book and Street. A lot of free game they're sharing about how to answer some frequently asked questions that startups have around startup accounting and more so startup finance. All right. Now, I'm guessing, you know, some people are like when they're little, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? They say doctor or firefighter, but how many people actually end up being what they said when they were little? So the interest in finance, you've worked for these big companies, now you're working with startups. When did that finance bug bite you to say, hey, I want to make a career out of this thing?
Oh, this, so it's interesting you said that. So I did want to. So there were two things which I was good at when I was in high school. And this was back in India, right? So it was numbers. I was good at math and I was good at biology. And those, you know, that happened to be my favorite subject. So initially I was contemplating that I'm going to become a doctor because I did enjoy biology more than math. So, but then as it happens, I got lucky. There was no internships back in the day. We didn't get to, you know, shadow or expose, you know, get to see, okay, which is truly the field you want to be in, right? So I happened to be at a doctor's office because I think one of my siblings was having an issue and my parents were not around and I had taken them. And seeing all that blood got me all crazy and all wound up. And that's when I said, I don't think this is my cup of tea. So there it goes. The doctor went off the thing. But at that time, I didn't know that there could be multiple avenues to be in a medical profession other than being a doctor, right? So limited knowledge there. But then, yeah, that got me exited out very quickly from that field. And then what was the second thing was I loved numbers, right? My dad had his own business, you know, a very big business back in India. And I would spend time with him, right? Be kind of, you know, his support over summer and everything. So kind of a de facto shadowing experiences. And I enjoyed what I was doing with him in terms of, you know, the behind the scenes, correct? Helping him with his books, helping him with what he was trying to do. And it just got me interested in the field of business and finance. And that's when I decided to become a CPA at that point in time. So I did become a CPA in India. And then when I migrated to the US, continued with that.
Okay, terrific. Well, hey, if at first you try something and it doesn't work, pivot to the next thing, right? Classic startup, right? You want to do one thing, you see what the reality is, what the customer exactly wants, and you pivot. Yeah. Okay, makes sense. So this whole pivoting thing is in your blood, right?
It is in my blood, and I'm very agile about it. I must say that. I compliment myself for that.
All right, so I'm going to try this metaphor between the medical field and finance, because the red in the medical field scared you away, but the red in finance got you interested, right? So a little serendipity there.
There's so red on both sides of the ledger. Yes.
All right. So, but you've worked in Fortune 15, big company. And then now you're working with startups day in and day out. So what is the biggest difference between working in finance for a large company or a large corporate versus working with startups?
Yeah. So both, I've enjoyed both since I've worked on both sides now, correct? Thoroughly enjoyed both those experiences. A large company, you get the feeling of being settled, right? You're not on pins and needles all the time, correct? That's, I think, the biggest difference, correct? Yes, you are. And again, depending on where you are in the organization, correct? Depending on your levels and what you're doing. You know that you have backup, you have a good team surrounding, like a team of, you know, strong people you can lean into, and the ship will continue to navigate, correct? But in a startup, you're basically part of that founder team where you're trying to navigate that ship. Like, you are equally responsible to navigate that ship and help that ship, you know, be out there, you know, face each and every kind of a turn and twist, correct? So it's more of that feeling of not being settled, because you know there is always so much on your, the responsibility level is different, your accountability is different, and it also brings in great satisfaction at the same time. But, you know, ultimately, that I think that's the biggest difference of being settled and unsettled, because the level of risk is much different and how it's viewed, correct?
I agree. And usually the startup founder feels an immense amount of pressure because the margin of error is so small.
Correct.
And you're not working with huge budgets either. So a loss hits a lot different. Even though a loss is a loss, it hits really, really differently when it's in a startup where you're operating with tight margins and every decision seems so critical. So using kind of that startup pressure cooker, because after you start, you're already in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to focus on a little bit of buyer beware.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the reality of startups is there's very little room for error, buyer beware, but we're going to try to prepare you for that fire by doing some things on the personal side, which is where we're going to spend most of our time during this podcast. So before, if it's too late, guys, you already started. Hey, this podcast is still going to be applicable because you could go back and fix some things. But what are some important personal financial considerations entrepreneurs should make before starting a business?
Personal financial considerations, top of my mind, which I would hope and I always advise my founders with is make sure you have a safety cushion for your family and yourself. Correct? Because a founder's life can be, it's not easy, it's not fun. Comes with a lot of ups and downs, right? Which is, you know, changes, it can change you as a person. It evolves you a lot very quickly. And so yeah, having that personal, that little cushion, right? That safety cushion when it comes to in terms of your bank balance, in terms of taking care of your family for health, you know, for all the wellness things, right? All that should be kind of at least have a support system which is managing that or help, you know, you can lean into so that you're not worrying about it as you're trying to build something beautiful and fundamental on this side, correct? I think that is the biggest agony. And more than the personal financial thing, to be honest with you, Elio, what I've seen with my founder clients, it's a lot of mental stress and agony, correct? Because you're dealing, to your earlier point, correct? The margin of error is so slim that you have to have a different, a totally different attitude and approach to how you manage your day and manage everything around you and your people around you, correct? So that mental stress can bother how you're being productive at the startup, which then impacts everything around you. And then you have basically a double dipping because then you're neither being happy here or happy here, which means that you don't end up making the kind of, you know, decisions you want to make, which is not going to be fruitful for the success of your startup, which eventually will hurt everything around you for personally, correct? So I think the mental stress is more important because when having that taken care of, it is based on your personal priorities. Everybody has different personal priorities. But making sure that you have that kind of support system around you to take care of that, be it financial, be it, you know, emotional, I think that's very, very critical.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Jim Carrey, this quote is attributed to Jim Carrey, but he says, I wish everybody could get rich so they could figure out that that's not the answer. And so to the question I originally posed, you've completely changed my thinking around personal finance because I was focused so much on the money. What you're saying is that personal finance serves multiple purposes. One, make sure that your family is taken care of. But two, it relieves some of the pressure, additional pressure, that lack of personal financial stability can cause, right? It's like you almost are going to already be under a lot of pressure. Why not avoid additional pressure on the personal side? All right, guys, you see why we booked Arthi to come on the show. I know you're tuned in. You're all the way leaned in now because we could all use better advice when it comes to both the personal side and the relief that we can find from the mindset side as well. But we need to take a break and pay some bills. Guess what, guys? I'm trying to take care of my personal financials as well. So hang in there with us. We'll be right back.
Support for the 614 Startups Podcast comes from Nationwide. Nationwide's mission is to protect people, businesses, and futures with extraordinary care. To help fulfill that mission, Nationwide is looking to invest its $350 million venture capital investment fund in InsurTechs that will help them create new and exciting products and solutions to meet the needs of their customers. If you're interested in partnering with Nationwide's venture capital team, visit nationwideventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is nationwideventures.com. Nationwide is on your side.
Today's episode is sponsored by the City of Dublin's Division of Economic Development. The City of Dublin provides world-class tailored business services and resources to ensure the best possible environment for businesses to recruit talent and thrive. Because of this strategic focus and commitment to employer growth, Dublin is the only accredited economic development organization in the state of Ohio. The City of Dublin supports startups and entrepreneurs by offering targeted resources and training programs to grow companies that are financially sustainable, innovative, and committed to creating jobs. Learn how other businesses depend on Dublin. Visit thriveindublinohio.com. 614 Startups Nation, welcome back. I knew you would be right there. This is too good to turn the channel. All right, we're back with my conversation with Arthi Rathi of Book and Street. We're going to continue to dig into this personal financial side of things. We heard before the break that it's both financial, yes, You need that security, that stability, but also you can get some mental relief. Now, in order to address some of the things we didn't do before we started, people who start startups are immediately thinking about how do I pay myself? Because that personal margin is really tight. So let's talk about what are some things founders should think about when it comes to paying themselves in a startup.
Yes. Because everybody needs to be paid for, you know, in some form or fashion to continue on a daily basis for the time. Time is so important. Time is the biggest, you know, asset which anybody brings to the table. I think a couple of things, right? And it again depends where in the stage of your startup you are at, correct? So a couple of things from a perspective of an early stage or a mid-stage startup where you have VCs or you have investors with you, correct? In your party, correct? Transparency is number one, correct? In my mind when I think about it, right? Because as a founder, you definitely want to be compensated. The investors know it. Your VC support knows it, correct? But what is it and when do you want it? They don't know that, correct? So as a founder, I always recommend that, you know, think about, okay, when do you want to start getting your salary or getting a compensation or whatever that is, correct? Equity, which will support you for what you're trying to do with the business. Be transparent about it. Be reasonable about it. Because again, you're trying to grow a business. You can't say, okay, I'm going to get the same amount what a CEO in a Fortune, you know, 50 company gets, or, you know, but make it more comparable to what a startup founder or a startup CEO gets, correct?
And what is that, Aarthi? What are you seeing? I mean, not all startups are created equal. Again, mm-hmm. you're saying it depends on the stage. But many of our founders are early stage. So I'll say pre-seed to seed. Some of them have some funding. Some of them are bootstrapping. What are you seeing in that early as a good benchmark for founder salary, especially if founders are looking for something that doesn't just address the short-term need of their personal needs, but also is long-term sustainable for the business?
Correct. So the pre-seed to seed kind of series of stage, correct? And depending on your funding. So assuming you've raised a few hundred thousand dollars, correct? I would compare that to more like having a baseline founder salary, right? Somewhere which is more reasonable and comparable. And you have market peers. You can talk to other founders in that same kind of an arena, get a gauge of what that is. There are tools out there, correct? Like as an example, Book and Street offers this where we do a compensation benchmarking because all the startups are private, right? You don't know what the public data out there is, but we do have resources where we can comb through and kind of give a benchmark salary compensation based on where you are in your stage, how much funding you've raised, and what your priorities and long-term goals for the business are, right? And how it impacts your cash flow, ultimately. So those are definitely things to consider. In terms of kind of a range, I would say anywhere between, I've seen founders from $50,000 to $125,000. In that kind of arena for an early, a pre-seed thing. Now, again, if you're a startup who has raised a good number of $1 million into your funding, then you can definitely think about seeking a little more. But again, the transparency and making sure that your investors are aware of it, the board knows about it and communicate it so it's not a surprise to anybody, and asking the reason why. Again, always at the back of the head, you want to keep in mind it needs to be reasonable to what you're trying to do for the business and it doesn't hurt the burn rate.
Yeah, I mean, excellent, Aarthi. And it's good to know that there are tools. So this is not a guessing game. And when you have an advisor or somebody like Aarthi, they can help guide you. And this is where I think having an advisory team or a good set of professionals that are part of your team, they might not necessarily work in your company, but that you surround yourself with, really helps. Because as a first-time founder, you don't know what you don't know. You're probably only looking at what is necessary for you to pay your expenses, and then you're using that as your guide for paying yourself. Now, another thing to think about, so you're going to look at benchmarks, you could talk to your peers, you could work with a Book and Street, and they can help answer these questions. But also, the compensation question has to do with corporate structure as well. And so how does corporate structure impact founder compensation and considerations for taxes?
Really good question, because I know a lot of founders don't think about it when they're starting off on their startup journey and then realize it down the road, which makes them kind of navigate a little bit of that legal and, you know, paperwork because to adjust for that. So basically, a startup, you have four different options of setting up your legal entity, correct? And how you pay under each of those entities is different. So you definitely have to keep in mind. And number one, I'll just kind of, you know, give a quick technical detail on it. And I'm not a tax advisor. Let me warn everybody. I'm not a tax advisor. I am a financial strategic advisor. So always lean into your tax professional to get how it impacts your personal tax situation. But from a structure, corporate legal structure perspective, correct? Most of the startups are set up as an LLC. And normally it starts with a single member LLC, correct? So it's like a sole proprietor. In that kind of a setup, and that's normally the default tax registration also. In that setup, the founder cannot pay themselves a salary because the profit you're making in the business is going back to you as a sole proprietor. So you'll be, it'll go into your personal, it's a pass-through which falls into your tax return as is for the profits you're making on the business. So there's definitely no concept of a W-2 employee or a salary in a single member LLC structure. Number two would be an LLC where you have multiple members, correct? Where you have more than one founder, you have multiple other partners or what it may be. And that's like a partnership setup. Now, in a partnership setup also, you'll be registered as an LLC, which basically means that you're registered as a partnership and you cannot take a W-2 salary. So each of the members, you'll come up with something called an operating agreement and you'll devise a methodology which is applicable and everybody's agreed to on how they want to distribute from the capital accounts of what the business is producing, correct? Be it the profit, be it the losses, how is it going to be distributed? One good thing about the partnership is you can always also set up something called a guaranteed payment. So irrespective of how the partnership is performing in terms of the bottom line, if you have a concept of a guaranteed payment which you put into the operating agreement, then they can, you know, every member can take a payment at periodically, whatever it's, they determine. And so that ensures cash flow for each member and each, you know, of the organization, correct? So that helps from a cash flow perspective for your personal requirements, irrespective of how the business is performing, correct? So that's from an LLC. Again, you cannot do a W-2 employee status there. Now, the third setup is like an S corporation, right? That S corporation, you can definitely have salaries. You can set up yourself in both an S corporation and a C corporation. You can set yourself as a W-2 employee and get salary and be taxed as a regular employee. So that will be, so that's important. Now, what are the pros and cons? Again, depends, right? So in depending on what your equity structure is, how are you planning to bring the other investors into the fold or your other co-founders and your other employees? One structure is better suited for some other aspects of how you want to build your business, and the other structure could be suitable for your personal preferences, correct? So it's kind of coming to the middle ground of, okay, saying these are the definitely immediate or the short-term priorities I have, which could be founders payout, or it could be that, no, I want to hire a big, strong team. If you want to hire a big, strong team and not so much worried about your founder, your own salary, then you say, okay, you know, a C-Corp structure is more applicable because then you can pay salaries, you can get the tax benefits, and you can also think about giving them equity awards, correct? Which is limited in an LLC structure. So it all depends on how you're thinking about the next 3 or 4 years of building the business, the blocks of the business, and who are you going to hire, who are you not going to hire, how are you planning to grow the business. If you think you're going to be a single member or a small team for X number of years, then having, you know, a S corporation and paying yourself could be a way avenue to go, right? Or you can do an LLC and have everything passed through, because even that could have tax benefits on your personal tax return.
Yeah, that's an amazing and very, very simple explanation that I think anybody can understand, right? Corporate structures get complicated. Taxes are a whole animal in and of themselves. So if you have questions about taxes or tax implications, please seek out a professional. We have a network professional here that we recommend. We won't talk about it now, but you'll probably hear about them during the break. All right. Now, knowing what we know about how to pay yourself or kind of ranges to think about, then we know that compensation and taxes are impacted by corporate structure. Let's talk about mistakes that you've seen. I'm sure not everybody who walks through your door has everything right and you're just picking it up and continuing with it as they scale. Sometimes when somebody walks in your office, what are some of the common mistakes you're seeing them making around how they pay themselves and how they're thinking about taxes and some other things that often slip through the cracks because founders are not finance professionals? What do you see?
So I think my first few clients when I joined Book and Street, correct? I saw both extremes. I saw one extreme where the founder was not paying themselves at all, correct? Because they were under the myth or the assumption that, oh, if I start paying myself, that's not going to reflect too well to the investors when I go to fundraise, right? Or it's like, oh, it's my business, so I need to take the hit, not pay myself, and just continue, you know, burning the crazy midnight oil to make the business successful. So that was one extreme, but that started affecting. And one of the reasons why I brought about the mental stress earlier in my conversation with you, Elio, is because I've actually seen that happen with one of the founders, right? Where they were not compensating themselves. Obviously, they had a family to take care of. They had other, you know, other things which come up in life, correct? Life happens, right? So it started affecting that, which again impacted the growth of the startup because they were trying to build something really awesome out here, but it did impact the productivity. And instead of doing something within 2 years, the goal stretches for 4 years, right? So you're slowing yourself down and you're hurting yourself in that process. So I've seen that situation. So, and then the biggest thing is health insurance because life is unpredictable. So you don't know what happens to you the next day, correct? So health insurance is a critical factor to consider, and not being compensated, you're not able to fund yourself for those kind of things. On the other extreme, I've seen a founder who, as soon as he had a raise, and it was a reasonable raise. I wouldn't say it's like a huge $30 million raise, but something more, you know, like a $3, $4 million raise, correct? As soon as the raise closed, the very first thing they did was increase their salary and their co-founder's salary pretty significantly, you know, to a more comparable to a normal mid-sized corporation, correct? What they didn't realize was that cash is fluid. It just burns very quickly. And before you realize, cash is done. Correct? Not thinking about the cash flow impact, not thinking about how it's going to impact the burn rate for the organization and how the ship is going to get navigated, because there's always going to be tides you have to cross as you're growing your business. Not realizing that, you know, you suddenly take a big paycheck, a pay increase for yourself. It is affecting your bottom line. It's affecting everything. And then in 6 months, the money is drained. Just, you know, and that's when you sit back and say, okay, do I need to go back and again go back and raise funds? What do I tell my board? What do I tell my current investor who gave me those dollars, right? Of how did I use the funds? Because everybody wants to know how the funds you're putting into the business is being used. And then you're back at the drawing board again, where you're dealing with the whole process again, where you're going back and raising funds because you want to, you know, keep yourself compensated, right? So that's why it's very important that you think about the reasonable levels of compensation, which is comparable for the stage of your startup. Bigger concern is reasonableness from an overall business perspective. You don't want to affect your burn rate drastically or change your cash out date because of an increased compensation you decide to take after closing a round.
All right. So this is a non-financial question. Mm-hmm. It combines finance, but it's also maybe a philosophical question when it comes to startups. What if the salary necessary to meet my expenses cannot be paid by my startup without having a negative impact on my burn rate? Have you seen that scenario? And philosophically, is it time for a second job? What are your thoughts on that?
Wow, that's a fully loaded question. Because, yes, and a lot of founders do cross that bridge where, you know, their expenses are not met by a startup. And I think that's One of the things with at the beginning of your question to me, correct? What are the personal financial considerations a person has to think about when they're starting? That's one of the big things, correct? Having that cushion or that safety net, correct? So this is where you have to be smart and pragmatic about your personal financial discipline, along with the discipline, a financial discipline for your business, for your startup, correct? It both goes hand in hand for a startup founder. It kind of, you know, works together. You can, both the tires have to be functioning together for that wheel to, you know, the car to drive further for that, for you to happen, correct? So, and what I mean by that is you'll need to kind of think about, number one, hopefully your spouses are working, your partners are working, and that gives you that safety cushion or not, or you have some kind of, you know, a backup plan for it, that helps. But if not in those scenarios, then my immediate personal, me being a very crazy financial nerd, I always say that you have to maintain a very strong personal financial discipline when you're going through that times, correct? Because as soon as you say you want a second job, you're basically, you're half between what you're trying to grow for your business and half in the other side of the, you know, the fence, correct? And when you, sometimes investors like it, sometimes they don't like it, sometimes they understand it, sometimes they don't understand it, correct? So it may make things down the road difficult for you when you're trying to go and fundraise, because everybody wants you to be 100% vested in what you're trying to grow and build out there for you to be able to have people validate and put a stamp of validation on your startup, right? Without you as your owner and the founder not having the 100% vested interest, it does create other problems and other issues for your growth of the business. I would say that for sure. But having a side hustle does not hurt. But that also gives you, there are other avenues of financing the business, right? When you know you have to take that kind of compensation or you need that kind of a profit. Like if you're an LLC, Elio, you have to make enough of profit to give yourself that profit back to yourself personally, correct? Which basically means that you have to become a hustler. You have to be aggressive about how your go-to-market is and be agile with it, correct? I see founders over-engineer what they're trying to make out there, correct? And they have so much of sunk cost because of it, and then they realize it's too late by that time, and then you have to just deal with it, and then you pivot, correct? Being open and being open to not being a perfectionist is a very critical thing for a startup founder, I believe, because otherwise it's too late for you to change direction and realize that what you're trying to build is not scalable. And that affects your bottom line, which affects what you're taking back home.
All right. I'm going to turn you into a financial philosopher yet. All right, folks. I know you're enjoying this conversation. We only have one more break left, and we're going to bring Aarthi back for the close. So hang in there. We'll be back after these messages. This episode is brought to you by KJK. Tired of the billable hour? KJK has a solution. The KJK GC Advantage program offers businesses comprehensive legal services in the areas of employment, corporate services, real estate, trademark, intellectual property, and estate planning, all for a set monthly fee. KJK serves as their clients' partners in business, not just their lawyers. Along with cost certainty and predictability, the KJK GC Advantage program gives clients peace of mind, knowing their projects will be handled quickly and efficiently, maximizing the return on investment on their legal spend. So don't go it alone, let KJK help. Learn more by visiting kjk.com. 614 Startups Nation, thank you for hanging in there. We are back for our final segment with my very special guest, Aarthi Rathi. All right, Aarthi, you've given us so much information. We're going to put a roof on this house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let's talk about something that you mentioned previously, which is this balance between compensation, which is cash on the paycheck, versus a compensation package, which may represent you taking care of some other things that cash would otherwise maybe have to be the default for. For example, health insurance, life insurance, a 401k. Some of the things that people might forego when starting a company, that's just par for the course when you're working for a mid-size or a larger company. So how are you having founders think about their entire compensation package and not just what they get on their paycheck?
So, yeah. So this again becomes interesting, right? Because a lot of it goes back to that structure we talked about, the corporate structure, right? Because any form of benefit or cash payment is kind of, you have to think about which structure entity you're set up as before you take it, because that has implications. So it's like, you know, you would think, oh, I can get benefits under, you know, I have a benefit program for my 2 employees or my 5 employees, so I can be party to that benefits, correct? It's not that simple, because it goes back again to the entity structure. That will be, again, something that, you know, as a founder, you have to think about. Because I, since you're not an employee, I can't, you know, I can't cover you under the normal benefit program, correct? As an LLC, correct? But then can I give you a health stipend to to compensate you for that? Not quite. Again, because an LLC, any form of payment is considered what we call owner's draw. So basically, you're taking a chunk of your profit out for any of those kind of, you know, expenses, right? BSA. So definitely the founder should think about the structure and how they want to, you know, put them. And this goes back to the priorities of where you are and what you want to do with, you know, what's happening with the business, correct? In terms of 401k, definitely, I think founders should seriously think about it and use it. There are different plans under the 401k umbrella, which a good retirement advisor can, you know, recommend. So lean into a retirement advisor. And then multiple 401k plan exists. Now, again, if you're a sole member or a two-member, three-member LLC, there's something called the SEP IRA, which really works well as a pension plan, correct? It's reasonable cost, it's not crazy, and it provides you those benefits for your retirement for a small business kind of an owner setup, correct? Now, when I think about insurance, Elio, there are... If I was an investor in your business, I would definitely, first thing I would ask you is get a key man insurance, because Elio, you're the key man for the business to thrive and survive, correct? So from an investor perspective, I would say, please get a key man insurance, because I don't want anything to happen to you, which means it'll happen to the business I've invested in, correct? That's number one. Number two, from your personal, as a founder, I would say there's something called the whole life insurance, which kind of works really well. And, you know, the business takes out the whole life insurance for you as a founder. That works as a good retirement. You know, it's a good plan, because it also contributes towards, a savings. It grows, right? So some of those things will, you know, are things which a founder should consider definitely as you're starting their business. And you may not want to do it right away as soon as you start the business, maybe in, you know, a year down the road or something, when you have a little more, you know that you have a good sense of where your startup is growing and you know it's going to continue. That's when you invest the time and energy to identify those kind of plans to bring it, you know, into the business.
Listen, you could probably talk about all the machinations of how you set that up and corporate structure. And that's why thinking about these things before you start is important.
It's critical.
But even after you start, It's not like many of these things cannot be changed or set up appropriately. So don't let that intimidate you either. Reach out to a professional like Arthi and the team at Book and Street so they can help. So just for our listeners who are like, oh my goodness, you're preaching to me, I need to talk to you, Arthi, give us a breakdown of the kinds of services you provide at Book and Street. And then if somebody wants to engage with you, get a consultation, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah. So Book and Street, correct? So Book and Street is a startup advisory firm, consulting firm. We basically support startups from the time you have your idea, from ideation to you go to Series A, Series B, correct? We support that category of startups and help them grow and scale. So basically, our whole model is based on the premise that we become part of your extended team. So we become partners to the founder, the co-founder, the CEO, COO, an extended part of that business to help you grow and scale, correct? The four different, I call it the pillars of what we offer in our Book and Street business as services. Our biggest strength and our biggest pillar, our overarching pillar, is our CFO advisory services, where we become, you know, we become the partner in crime, I call it, right, with the founder team, correct? And we navigate everything with them, helping them understand financial strategy, business strategy, how they can scale their business, support them in their capital raises, and then just put the whole financial, you know, the financial house together, because it's such a critical component of how you're growing your business. Yes, you as a founder will be growing. You're the visionary, you're the creative people. You grow what you do, what you do best, correct? But everything else in the house needs to be taken care of, which is where the CFO advisor plays a very big role for you to think through all that and set it up well, correct? Along with helping you navigate those crazy things which happen as you're growing in the business. So that's our umbrella. And under that umbrella comes the other financial support functions, which is the controller services, which we offer, and the analyst services, which basically takes care of managing the back office for the financial function. Making sure you're following in compliance, supporting your tax accountant, keeping your books in order, keeping your books in GAAP. Now, GAAP is a term that not many people may be familiar, because everybody thinks about cash all the time. But GAAP accounting is critical, especially as you're growing and scaling, because as soon as you go to a VC or an investor, they're going to ask you for your financial statements. And they're going to ask you for GAAP-based financial statements, correct? That's the way they evaluate your business. That's the way they compare you to other peers, so that they make a decision to invest in you or not to invest in you. So it's important. So that's where the controller function and the CFO play together to help build those kind of solid financial reporting tools for you. The biggest strength from a CFO comes from all the financial modeling exercise, correct? So we talked about this whole exercise of cash burn rate and cash flow, how critical it is to the business. That exercise comes in from a form of a financial modeling exercise. And that's, again, super critical. So as you're thinking about the early stage that you're planning to start your startup, that's one of the first stepping stones which a founder should be thinking about is, okay, I have a vision. I know what I'm building as a product, correct? But converting that product into a scalable model where it's going to make money, it's going to monetize it, you need a financial plan. That financial plan will come from a model, which is what the CFO advisor will be supporting them and be the backbone to build it up with them, correct? That model is also critical, because that's when I was talking about transparency and communication about the founder for giving a compensation, correct? You tell me, Elio, that you know what, I want to have a compensation for 614 as an example, correct? And you have a couple of investors, or you have a couple of key customers you want to share your model with. I would insert that into the model, saying, okay, my projection is that I'm going to be paying Elio as a founder X dollars, and I want to budget for that. I want to plan for it, right? Because that will determine how that impacts your cash flow, your bottom line, and what you want to raise. But you're also being transparent with your future investors, saying, I'm being upfront with you that this is what I really need to be compensated, and it's out in the plan, correct? So you're thinking about everything together. So that's where it helps a lot to have a CFO advisor or a controller, you know, the financial advisor with you, correct? So that's one big pillar. Our second pillar is our talent solutions, correct? Where we have a VP of talent and a talent group who helps everything from recruiting to coming up with your employment policies, your handbooks, signing up for benefits, looking at what kind of health insurance benefits work for you, what kind of plans are there available for you, right? And how to navigate that whole insurance, you know, in a benefit portfolio. If you want a handbook to be written up, the talent services groups can do for you, thinking about everything HR and employment related, right, is what our talent service function does. Our third pillar is an equity compensation pillar. So a lot of startups, correct, you start as a founder, you are going to bring somebody else, or you have co-founders, you're going to have equity, correct? That's how you start up the business. How do you design your equity plans? How do you think about, okay, what awards do I give to who? I want to get a key hire as a COO or a CRO. How do I compensate them? Because again, cash is tight for a growing startup. You can't pay the person for the kind of experience they bring to the table just by cash. So you have to think about the compensation package holistically by not just cash, but also equity awards. How do you structure your equity awards? How do you design your equity? How much in dilution you as a founder want to take and what's acceptable to you is important, correct? So helping them design and think through that equity plan design, working with your lawyer, legal team collaboratively to come and design the plan. And then administer that. So once you decide, okay, I'm going to have X different type of awards or different kind of equity. I'm going to have preferred stock. I'm going to have equity. I'm going to have options, correct? All that gets designed, and then you have to administer it, correct? Because you have to keep monitoring it. Because every time you go for a capital raise or every time you go to do some other kind of a financing round, there's always going to be changes to that equity structure. So being able to administer and manage that is something which we offer and we have expertise in. So that's our third big pillar. So that in a nut is what I kind of say is what we offer, but everything which is what a startup needs to grow and scale.
Yeah, I love it, Aarthi. And so you guys have identified kind of those key things from a financial standpoint that a startup needs to be successful. You may not need all three on day one, but Booking Street is built to scale with you. All right. Now, if they want to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you, have coffee with you, and get a relationship started?
Great. So they can go to our website, correctbookandstreet.com. Correct. There is a link there where you can book a coffee chat with any of our CFOs and Michelle. Right, Michelle, Annie, myself, and the other CFOs, correct? There's a link there, and you can book a coffee chat, you can book a Zoom, you can book it however you want, be it 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, however long you want to engage with us. And yeah, and that gets onto our calendar, and we love to talk to startup and founders.
Wonderful. All right, Aarthi. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been very, very valuable. A reminder to some, new information to others, but what do you do with knowledge? You have to put it into action. Just listening to this podcast is not going to solve the issue. You need to take that next step, whether independently, with a different advisor, or reach out to Aarthi and the folks at Booking Street and see what they can do to help. All right, folks, I now need to give you my final word. And here it is. Number one, we touched on mental health. Now, anytime I mention mental health, I always have to say this. Listen, if you're feeling the pressure, whether at work or at home, there's nothing wrong with reaching out and asking for help. So talk to a professional if you're feeling that mental pressure that comes with startups. And if it gets to the point where you're feeling hopeless, there's a hotline for that, and that number is 988. There's nothing wrong with using that hotline if you need help. You are too valuable to yourself, to your family, and to this community to not get the help that you need. All right, so here's the final word after that, okay? If you want to be successful, planning is necessary. When Aarthi says she's a finance nerd, what I hear her saying is she can help you plan because regardless of the idea, the financial part of that plan is going to be critical to you having the impact you want to have. This is not just a nice to have. It is a must have on your journey to success. All right, guys, thank you for hanging out with me and Aarthi. Stay tuned for future episodes, future events, and all things 614 Startups. Until next time, peace.
That's a wrap, folks. You can find this and all our episodes on our website, 614startups.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you'd like updates sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website. To engage in the 614 Startups community, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at 614 Startups on all platforms and join the conversation. For sponsorship opportunities and collaborations, email us at info@614startups.com.